Welcome to Holden Village. This afternoon in the fireside room, Bill Malcolmson will be speaking on the subject of creative aging, money. So let's listen in on Bill.
Lord, thou knowest better than I myself know that I am growing older and will someday be old. Keep me from the fatal habit of thinking I must say something on every subject and on every occasion. Release me from the craving to straighten out everybody's affairs. Make me thoughtful, but not moody. Helpful, but not bossy. With my vast store of wisdom, it seems a pity not to use it all. But thou knowest, O Lord, that I want a few friends at the end. Keep my mind free from the recital of endless details. Give me wings to get to the point. Seal my lips on my aches and pains. They are increasing, and the love of rehearsing them is becoming sweeter as the days go by. I dare not ask for grace enough to enjoy the tales of others' pains, but help me to endure them with patience. I dare not ask for an improved memory, but for a growing humility and a lessening cocksureness when my memory seems to clash with the memories of others. Teach me the glorious lesson that occasionally I may be mistaken. Keep me reasonably sweet. I do not want to be a saint. Some of them are so hard to live with, but a sour old person is one of the crowning works of the devil. Give me the ability to see good things in unexpected places and talents in unexpected people. And give me, O Lord, the grace to tell them so. Amen. That's not too bad, is it?
That's pretty good. None. You can read that.
Right. I still have difficulty believing that's a 17th century nun's prayer, but you know, it's I'll take it at that. When I put this together, I came up with five M's of aging creatively: meaning, mortality, money, memory, and mission. This is the middle one, money. Some have suggested that it would be helpful to hand out money during the course of this class.
Yeah.
I'm reminded, of course, of the parable of the five loaves and two fishes, and perhaps if someone started handing some out, it would multiply. On the other hand, it might not. So maybe we better not test that one out. This really is not so much a discussion on how to make money as you get older, or even what to do with it. Though, I might mention a couple of things in that regard. I'm not selling stocks. But if you're not familiar with the Kiplinger weekly, Kiplinger monthly, Kiplinger newsletter, I guess it's called. That's a very good one. We ran into that a couple, 3 years ago, and then found out that Kiplinger puts out a thing on retirement, which is a monthly publication. These are kind of expensive, but it's very good. We've saved quite a bit of money already because Kiplinger said you shouldn't do such and such, and we decided, well, maybe they know what they're talking about. So we didn't, and it helped considerably, right, Laurie?
Yeah.
So anyway, I just mentioned that. I get no cut for that or anything of that sort. Okay. I think what we're dealing with when we're dealing with money and creative aging is we're dealing in many ways with what money represents. For a lot of us, money represents not only financial security, but security. It also represents how important possessions are to us. It also represents the ability and the opportunity to be of help, because a lot of help in our society involves the giving of money. It also represents the independence from reliance, or at least total reliance, on other people. And it represents a form of control over our lives. So I think money really represents a whole lot of things, and we're going to be dealing with some of those. In a sense, what we're dealing with is sort of the psychological aspects of money, one may put it that way, and the spiritual aspects of money. If you were to think for a moment about what Jesus said about money, that the love of money is the root of all evil, the love of money, not money, thank heaven, one wonders exactly what that meant, or if what it meant was that to be oriented around the need to acquire is to follow a path that leads you to evil. Certainly that would make sense, wouldn't it? To overly focus on possessions, certainly that's a major theme in Jesus' teaching, that that's wrong, because if you seek first possessions, you will not seek the kingdom of God. You remember also the material in the Sermon on the Mount where he talks about why do you worry about things? Why do you worry about the future? What is it? You can quote it as well as I can. The lilies of the field, they toil not, neither do they spin. But
your heavenly Father knows you have need of all these things.
Right.
And the birds of the air.
Birds of the air, yes. And yet, that could sound, if you just take it by itself, that could sound like, well, you know, why worry? I mean, it's fine. Everything will take care of itself. But then there's also the parable of the talents. You remember that one? Mm-hmm. How does that go? I mean, not quote it, but what's the point?
Invest your talents.
You gotta use what you
have. Right.
Look to the future.
Just good sense.
Different amounts.
Yeah. So the responsible use of money, the responsible use of what you've earned seems to be an important thing. Yet, look at the parable of the, come on, Bill, laborers in the vineyard, where you have an interesting attitude toward money, don't you? Because here's, you remember the story, the laborers keep coming in during the day, and the those who came at the tail end get paid the same as those who came at the beginning, which is really rotten capitalism when you think about it. But it seems to be the point that what was being dealt with here was the graciousness of God, if the landowner represents God, this probably does. And that grace is not something you earn, but is freely given. I mean, at least that's one interpretation of the parable. And also, another interpretation would be that the focus is not on money in that parable. It's not on earning. It's not on merit.
On salvation.
Pardon me?
Would it be on salvation? And it doesn't make any difference when you come into the kingdom of God. You are saved whether you come in the very beginning or
right.
Just before the door shuts.
Right. I think that's a very important part of it. I think that's, in so many of the parables, it's many-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
And I preached on that theme when I've used it, and I preached on about four or five others when I've used it too. Okay, now I want to move on a little bit to number three, because this, those of you who've been here before know we do a lot of sort of interaction stuff, and we get involved in things and raise questions that are not always raised in the normal course of events. So I asked myself this question. When I was working on this, I thought, well, now, let's say that I had to, as the current jargon goes, downsize. That is that the Social Security that Lori and I get didn't go up fast enough, and we really should have made more money. You always find that out with Social Security. You really should have made more money than you did. You never thought it would be this low. But or the pension plan that our denomination has, was conditioned, or at least it would have been incredibly helpful if you'd made an awful lot of money the last 20 years or 10 years of your employment. But anyway, so you look at that, and as you get older perhaps, and as inflation, as this doesn't always keep up with inflation like you'd like, and you have to downsize and you have to decide, what am I willing to give up? And I asked myself, well, what would I be willing to give up? Would I, and I think we all ask ourselves these questions, would I be able to get, or willing to give up, how about travel and entertainment and that sort of thing? Now, would that be high up on the list, or would that be the last thing I would give up? How would you feel about that?
For some of us, it'd be very important.
Perhaps
not.
For us, it would be real important. I really hate to knock that one.
You give your first 10% to the Lord.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
That's what I do, and then I make out my bills.
Yeah, okay. How about giving to causes in which you believe, including the church and including charities and so forth? Would you, no matter what you make, just automatically give, as this lady does, give 10% or 15% or 20% or 5% or whatever, or would you cut that?
Probably would depend on what we're talking about in terms of amount.
Yeah, okay.
We have to eat.
You have to eat.
Pay the rent, taxes.
Okay, so you'd be saying, Wynn, that the last thing you'd cut then would be really food,
I guess,
and housing.
Maybe
you'd want to live somewhere, probably shelter. Yeah.
I wonder if I could get some help. I'm going to move into a cooperative, and a two-bedroom place will cost me $200 a month more than a one-bedroom place. And the first situation will take about 50% of my income.
The two-bedroom?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
The other one, 40.
Do you live by yourself?
Yeah. I don't need the two-bedroom apartment. I'm living in one now, and I'd have to sell a bunch of furniture, give up all my media equipment.
Couldn't you move? This is something you face all the time. I mean, Laurie has worked with people here who face that every day. What would moving into the two-bedroom apartment, would that be an easier transition for you? Because less traumatic transition.
It would, because I wouldn't have to get rid of much of my stuff.
Yeah. But see, that's important, isn't it? Mm-hmm. That is, if we make, to pick up on that, if we make transitions in life, my feeling at least is, and a lot of statistics show this, it's easier to make the transition slowly. It's better for you, physically, mentally, emotionally, to make the transition as slowly as you can rather than to make it all at once. I know in retirement homes, for example, there's the levels of care. Like my folks, for example, they were in a fourplex where they had, how many meals did they fix? They fixed
two
meals. And then ate one in the dining hall. Okay, and they basically had an awful lot of independence. Then they had to move into assisted living. Well, assisted living, is the next level of care. The transition was difficult, but it wasn't as difficult as if they'd gone straight to the health center. So I think, personally, I think that at our stage in life, we need to be very conscious of how traumatic are the transitions we make. I think that's important. Why are you going to take the two bedrooms?
You would.
Yeah, even if it costs more, because I would want to downsize, so to speak, more slowly rather than rapidly. That'd be my gut feeling.
Yes, I have downsized.
You have? Yeah, but one bedroom is pretty small.
Well, yeah.
Well, especially giving up something that you really enjoy.
I got a bunch of media equipment, so I can project.
And you can enjoy it.
If you were my father, I would tell you to hang on to it. Because that's what you truly enjoy.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised.
Yeah, but I won't be able to travel much.
That's the choice. Okay.
You have a floor plan, you have one bedroom, and you have a lot of company. Can you work this media equipment into your living room?
Well, there is a one-bedroom place that's quite a bit larger, but I would only save about $40 to $50 a month. I moved into it because it has a huge dining room area.
Yeah.
And it's sort of a, I don't want to bother. details.
Well, no, but it's a case study, really, in a sense, and it illustrates exactly what I want to illustrate, so I appreciate it. Because you are making choices. You're saying, which is more important to me? And if that means I don't have the money to travel, and travel is really more important to me than keeping the media equipment, I mean, that's a decision you have to make.
You can do a lot with $200 a month.
Yeah, right. Right, that's true.
Case in point, I guess, is all.
And do we, at what point would come, well, I don't know how you are, but we like to be able at times, if we need to help our family out, that is, we have three adult children. Adult most of the time, and I think you understand what I mean by that, and we'd like to be able to help them out, but if we really downsized, that probably is one thing that would go fairly quickly, wouldn't it? And yet it's psychologically that's kind of a problem, because they always like to know that, well, mom and dad are there in case things really get rough, you know, they can at least loan me some money. Hopefully at a very low rate or no rate of interest. Okay. How about one thing we discovered in retirement was that our health insurance doesn't pay dental bills. We asked somebody, why was that? And they said, well, you see, the theory is that your dental work and stuff is done when you're younger. I thought, that's about the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Our teeth are falling apart as soon as we hit 62. I mean, it's an amazing thing, but I think there's a cause effect there. And so our dental bills are like this. And we kept looking to see if there's any dental insurance anywhere. We found some dental insurance, but it really doesn't. It's not competitive. You know, you just as well off spend the money yourself. Because, of course, in insurance, particularly if it's a high co-payment, as this is, in insurance, you're taking, you know, you figure you weigh risks, right? Okay, medical expenses. Well, you and I know that if you're not 65 yet, you're not on Medicare, then your medical expenses are a little different than when you move into Medicare. But even then, you need a supplement, don't you? Even then, you still spend money on medical. Where is that on your hierarchy? A lot of people, as you know, and maybe you, decide I'm not going to get something done, or I'm not going to spend some money on certain medical things, even though I probably should. But you say, no, there's other things I have to spend it on. So I just illustrate that as we get older, these are difficult, difficult decisions to make, and I think it's helpful if we feel free to talk these things over with peers, not with family so much always, because they have vested interests in these things.
I'd like to ask, how important is it to us to leave something to our children?
Yeah,
should
exactly.
We spend it or should we save it?
Right, yeah.
So we give them something. Of course, if you own your home, you're going to give them a lot anyway eventually.
Right.
I don't happen to be in that situation.
I think that's a biggie. I don't know if you were here the day I mentioned that we took, Lori and I sat in the seminar one time called How to Spend Your Children's Inheritance, which was a kind of a mean-spirited thing, but helpful, actually, in some ways. But anyway, if you're into reverse mortgages. Okay, well, how about that question? Let's get different ideas on that. What do you think? Should you, if you can, be responsible for having some money left so that your kids can benefit from it? Is that important? Or should you say, well, heck, you know, it's their lives. I mean, they go out and make their own money. Why should I support them? I mean, after all, they're adults. Let them work it out themselves.
They're usually better off than we are.
Yeah. Lori, you have a view on this one.
Yeah, I think you ought to spend your money.
Go ahead.
How do you know how much to spend? You don't know what's around the bend.
Precisely. Precisely. Right. You don't know what you're going to need.
Well, the nursing home will take it all anyway, so why not enjoy some of it?
Now, you do know that you can, if you're in this bracket, you do know that you can give up to $10,000 a year to somebody or people or family without them paying income tax on that. To this day, I've been trying to figure out how to tell Mother that. I haven't been able to work it out yet. But it's hard to put that in the conversation somehow. But anyway, you can do that. But yes, one of the issues we face, I think, is that if you're in a retirement home, for example, if you're in any situation where there's a healthcare thing involved, and they can take whatever you have and spend it down, way down to nothing.
Practically.
Yeah. Is there a way to hedge on that? Well, the only way I know. Pardon me?
Or should we?
Or should we hedge?
It's immoral to do that.
Should we hedge?
Yes. When Medicaid is set up for the poor.
Yeah.
Well, yes, it has, but you also have paid your Social Security all these years that you have worked, and you will never receive everything back that you've paid into it, so you are entitled to some of that.
To Medicaid or Medicare?
Medicaid.
I don't know.
Go ahead.
You don't, we're talking a lot in terms of health, which of course is a major project for all of us.
Sure is.
But there are other disasters that can hit. And you want to keep your independence, so don't you have? Shouldn't you keep a sort of backup of some kind?
I think so, personally.
Yes. Caught up in an earthquake or whatever.
Right. How do you feel? Another side of this. How do you feel about asking for help from, say, your family? How do you feel about moving in with your kids?
Not if you can afford it.
Why not?
It's
too hard on the family.
They're already fighting over what I got and over the house. And I said, so I settled it this summer. I told them, well, in a few years, I'll probably have to be in the rest home anyway. So I said, I'm going to sell my house and everything I got, and then I'm going to get the thing that goes on the fender like you got.
You're spending your children's inheritance, right? Okay. Nothing shows what's happening in your family like money. Nothing, that's often the one that kind of breaks it, isn't it? That shows how people really feel. Have you come to the place yet where you give power of attorney for financial decisions to somebody other than yourself?
Should do it.
Yeah, power of attorney is a good thing to have. The problem is, who do you give it to? If you're married, you give it to your spouse, assumedly, but suppose when that person goes, who's the next one in line?
Durable
power of attorney, I'm sorry, yeah. Yeah, so you have an attorney, in fact. Or we talked about healthcare decisions yesterday, but who, in terms of financial decisions, and how soon do you do it? How do you wrestle with that one?
It depends on your relationship with your children.
It sure does.
Or other people.
Or other people, right? It doesn't have to be your children. Yes, it can
we
be someone else.
Confident in our children, and we're fortunate that we do, so not a big worry.
Uh-huh.
We can turn it over to one, and then we know that it's going to be all right with both of them.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Now, you can draw up a document without telling this person, this child, and you can change it.
Right.
And it's only when
sure.
you become incapacitated yourself that
right.
it would be used. And that might never happen.
Or it might not.
So it's still a good idea to do it, right?
I think so. I think it's very important to do that. We haven't done that one yet. We've done the health care, but we haven't done the financial one yet. But I think that is extremely important. But choosing who it should be is important. And it doesn't have to be a member of your family. It can be a lawyer. It can be a trusted friend. It can be anybody. Preferably someone younger, I suppose.
Or at least in
can't trust your children.
Perfect.
Pretty bad situation.
Mm-hmm. But why would so suggest I don't want to be cared for by my children? Okay. Would you ever say your children or even one of your children is doing fairly well financially? Would you hesitate to borrow from them if you needed the money?
Yeah, I wouldn't. I just have the kids are always saying use your money on yourself and so forth. I just know they'd always be there for me if I needed them. So.
Well, after all, you were there for them.
Yeah, and I still am. I didn't say I'm helping
right.
a whole lot in one instance.
Yeah.
They know that I'll help them.
Don't they, in a sense, owe you something? I know we don't like to think this way, but
you know, we took care of them for 16, 20, sometimes 30, 35, 40 years. What's wrong with their taking care of us?
I think they feel that way. Uh-huh.
How many would lend to their children? We sometimes have some savings.
We would.
My brother's lent to all his kids.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
I did once, and I still don't have the money back.
Oh, well, see, that was the problem. You lent expecting to get it back.
Well, I've always been told, be sure you do it in a financial, proper, written way, and specify what it is. I think it's good training for them.
It is, yeah.
Charge them interest.
Schedule at a lower rate.
I didn't do that.
That's what my father did. And I appreciate that very much. He would charge me. The way he worked it, he'd say, this is the percentage of interest I can get on this money at the bank or CD or whatever. I will charge you 1% less. Mm-hmm.
That's good.
That's the way he did it. And it was a written agreement. And we knew how much each month. And so now, at one point, they forgave the debt for some other reasons.
No, you paid it.
Oh, of course, yeah. And, you know, so, yeah, I think that's good advice.
We have the problem right now with a granddaughter, all of a sudden. And I think it's going to be very profitable for her. It's going to help her straighten out her financial activities.
Uh-huh.
In fact, we sent her to this, the government has an agency, what do they call that?
HUD?
No. Just to help people that can't make payments. It's
yeah,
all kinds
I know
of
what
guidance.
You mean, but I can't
it's
think
free.
Of that, but yeah.
Commodity insurance. Pardon me?
Financial counseling service?
I think that's what it's called.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And we've sent her to that, and she's working on it. And yeah. She only owes me $50 a month, for goodness sake. She's making as much as her father is. A starting job, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
It isn't about the matter of income.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this is going to be very wholesome for her, while it's kind of painful for me in between.
Yeah.
That's when the problem comes, when the friction develops.
Well, we're not frictioning yet, but we're
but you get put is, it, pressure is it true of our generation? I realize there's a variety of ages here, but I mean, generally speaking, I think it would be common. Is it true of our generation that we really have a strong antipathy to the idea of living with our kids?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, if we get even if it's say it's one of us rather than two. But that really would be a long ways down the road before you'd ever do it. Why do we feel that way?
We lack independence.
Right. Is there anything more to it than that?
There is pressure and tension, and there's somebody else in the house, especially if they're losing some of their marbles.
Uh-huh.
We took care of my dear mother, I being the oldest,
uh-huh.
until I noticed that her health was going. Really obviously. So I said, hey, next in line, your turn.
Yeah,
took
right.
her all the way to Buffalo, New York.
Right.
Well, society is set up that way, you know, with the with so many going to a nursing home or
uh-huh.
living by themselves
uh-huh.
or even
uh-huh.
helping. All the government agencies say it's better to be on your own.
But suppose on your own meant your health is deteriorating, you're in a situation where you would go probably into a nursing home if you didn't, say, go with one of your kids. Would you choose a nursing home over going with one of your kids?
No. I don't think so.
It
would
depend on your children's situation. If they had a mother-in-law house, if you will.
And
so you could have some independence.
There are quite a few of these in Ellensburg.
Uh-huh.
A little apartment tacked onto a house. A little house next to the big house in the alley. We've had several friends who have had parents living with them. They have their independence. But you are there and they are there. And if they need help, you can be there just like that.
So it depends on...
And the situation.
Depends on their age. Depends on their marital situation. Depends
right.
on if there are kids around. Depends on what your relationship with them is already. Okay, yeah.
Lots of ears.
I think, and I haven't thought much about this, but I think if I could persuade one of the kids to do a mother-in-law apartment like that, you know, that would be really my preference. If Lori went, for example, and I was by myself, and I was, you know, quite a bit older, and I was not as able to get around, I would not I would not want to go into if my finances were such that it wasn't the quality that I would like. Okay, because there's a levels of quality in nursing homes, right, Laurie? She worked in one professionally for a number of years.
There are some situations where a person who is, say, living with a child,
yeah.
I mean an adult one,
yeah.
Become extremely isolated. And when they experience a nursing home, suddenly there are all these people and all these activities, and it's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a myth, you're saying, that we have in our minds lots of times, a kind of a myth about, let alone nursing homes, retirement homes, for that matter, that there are places where you go to die, or there are places where you go to vegetate, or there are places where, you know, everybody's the same age. My heavens, you know, wouldn't that be awful to be with everybody the same age?
I think the question of how long do you stay when you visit has a bearing on it. I have felt, for example, that staying 5 or 6 days when I go clear across country is too long.
That's a good point.
It's not so much for my children, it's the in-laws. I wouldn't mind moving in with my children, but I would hesitate very much to do it, especially when it's my son's wife. She would have to do more maybe than my son would.
You're a smart man.
I'd have to have that experience. But in every case, I have only three children. But in every case, it would be the in-law.
Yeah.
That would
you're a very sensitive man. Because if my mother, for example, lived with us, let's say, would it be harder on you or me, dear?
Gee, I'm not sure.
It'd be an in-law.
I know they're in section.
Well, you don't particularly like mother.
She's okay.
Can I write that down?
We're giving you a case history here.
Had the brunt of it.
Yeah.
I had a case history.
My
mother just died.
Was him more than you, huh?
She was about 93, and about 5 years ago, she fell on her home. Uh-huh. Was on the floor for 24 hours, and nobody knew about it. And I got her into the hospital, and found out she'd been falling for about three years,
yeah.
Sometimes out in the field.
Yeah.
I finally persuaded her. I says, "Mother, in fact, she almost burnt the house down when she fell for 24 hours. She'd left a pan on there. It was an old-fashioned, thick pan that didn't burn through when the burn was on 24 hours. But anyway, I got her into a retirement home with assisted living. And she didn't like that first, but after a while, she really enjoyed it. She'd been on a farm by herself for 30 years.
Oh,
been a widow.
Now. Oh, boy.
And she was driving, and she lost her license just before that driver's house. So I had to go over there several times a week, about 20 miles away, to take her shopping and bank and things like that. Then finally, she fell. I kept the retirement home and put her in a nursing home. And as soon as possible, I got out. And I had to treat her at home rather than have the nursing home and do. They told me, says, you can do the same thing, bind your wounds and stuff like that. And so I did. I asked her, "Mother, do you want to come and live with me?" No. I says, we got a room for you and everything else. I would gladly.
Yeah.
She said, "No, I want to be she's very independent."
If she lived on a farm by herself for 30 years, I'd say she defines independence.
I had a very difficult time with her.
All right, well.
I told her, you've got your separateness from me, Mother. But it is such a problem, and she didn't want to spend her money. I says, "Mother, for crying out loud, you saved that money, you skimped." I says, "It's your money." And so we used her money, and she didn't save it for me, thank you.
That is an interesting trait I've noticed too. People in their, say, 90s, for example, or 80s and 90s, often, because of what they came through, I think, historically, even though they may have quite a fair amount of income or be really very comfortably fixed, do not want to spend money. I mean, they've learned to be very careful and cautious, and it's not a financial thing, is it? It's a psychological thing, a spiritual thing, really, in many ways. Figure this isn't right. I mean, my mother, who is very well fixed financially, buys all her clothes from the rummage.
So so do I.
Yeah. You know, and that's fine. Shouldn't need to, but I mean, it's fine. You know, and it's probably good recycling. Though I don't think she does it for the recycling reasons. Right? No. Okay, let's move a little here this minute. Control and independence. That seems to be a basic issue here, and I want you to look at a quotation on creative aging. It's the second page. It's the one that starts at the top. Society's positive, okay? See that? This is not the nun's prayer. This is the other page there. Society's positive evaluation of independence and its negative attitude toward dependency create anxiety and fear among older adults when illness, poverty, or failing hearing or sight increases their need for help. One study found that financial and physical dependency was the principal cause of low morale among older people. Some older people would literally rather die than become dependent.
I've heard people say I'd rather be dead than go to a nursing home.
Yeah. Rather die than be dependent.
I'd rather go to the nursing home.
Yeah, I would too.
I don't want to live with my kids.
Well, that's a choice. That's another situation. Yeah.
Rather than be dependent. Do you feel, let's say, you just think about this for a moment now. If you say there's three choices here. Think over the last 20 years. That would be... 20 years, let's see, this is 19, I have to think what, when they would be. 1974 to 1994, okay. Over the last 20 years, if you had to make a choice, would you say that you have had a high degree of control over your life, or a high degree of independence, if you want to think of it that way, or an average degree, or a low degree? Last 20 years now. High degree of control or independence, average degree of control or independence, however you define it, or low degree. How many of you think you've had a high degree? Interesting. The vast majority, okay. We're gonna change the question after a bit, but how many of you think you have had an average degree? Okay, that's three of us there. How many of you think you have a low degree? Nobody. Interesting. Now think about the last year, 1993-94, let's say, I think in terms of academic year. How many high degree control independence?
Well,
I
almost agree. I had that care, I wasn't independent. Because I was somebody else's dependent.
All right.
I think a single person has even more independence. Come and go and do what you want.
Average degree, last year, this last year, average degree.
That's one that I was.
Low degree. Okay, you.
Would you define the difference?
No, I'm not going to define it. It's your definition, not mine, because we're asking for your view of this. Okay, look at your, now project. Let's take 5 years from now, 1999. Well, let's take the turn of the century, year 2000, 6 years. What do you think if we were in this room and I asked the question again, think of how old you'll be now, think of what situation you might be in, how many high degrees? Project. Now, of course you don't know. This is a guess. High degree. Average. Low.
Goes down.
Uh-huh. That's where the rubber hits the road. When you think about that, isn't it? Yeah.
If you're healthy.
Now, what would, now we'll deal with the question you raised. What would, when you answer that, high, medium, or low, what are you thinking of?
Health.
Mainly health?
Mobility.
Mobility.
Thinking of what age I'm going to be. I'm over 80 now.
And you'll be farther over. You'll be over and over.
I thought it was more of the freedom to make all decisions.
Now, that's a very interesting definition, freedom to make all decisions. I would say, for example, that in terms of the way I look at it, now that I'm retired, I have a higher degree of control and independence than I did before retirement. I would have said average then, I would say high in the last year. So, and I think I would base it exactly on your definition, which is the ability to make decisions. Okay, other kinds of definitions. How do you decide whether or not you have a high or low or medium degree of independence or control?
You can't drive a car.
Now there's a very specific example. Okay.
Or access to public transportation.
Yeah. Or access to public transportation, right. I remember when my dad, let's see, how old was he when he couldn't drive a car anymore?
87.
Yeah. His sense of self-worth, at least for a while, went like this. I mean, that was a, you know, that was devastating to my father.
Our father was almost blind. He wouldn't quit.
Yeah. He'd signal right and go left.
You know,
missed stop sign.
He hardly ever used the car. I mean, they went to the bank and to the grocery store. That was it. They never drove otherwise for the last, what, 5, 6, that didn't make any difference.
Yeah,
that was, you want, okay. How do you
it allows me to do all the volunteer work I do.
It's not just independence. It allows you to do some things that you prize very highly, right? It's very important, okay? How else do you decide whether I have a high or low or medium degree of independence or control? Some other examples, yeah?
My husband was a faculty.
Yeah, I think that's true. Sure. He will be more dependent on you, you mean, in that sense. Yes, yes. Where does that raises another issue. Where does the independence-dependence thing come down when you're, in a sense, a caregiver? That is, when you are the person who has to a greater degree, let's say, not totally take care of, perhaps, but the other person is more dependent on you, is probably a better way to put it, rather than caregiver now. But then where does your independence go?
Down here.
Right. Yeah. Right. Or you trade the independence for another value, don't you? I mean, in a sense, that's what you're doing also. You're trading the independence, which is a high value, for another value, which is you care very deeply about the person, and it's a way of showing that, you know, and that's a pretty high value, too.
But isn't that still a high degree of independence because you've made that decision?
Good point. That's true. You've made the decision.
Yeah,
in a sense, circumstances have forced it on you, but you've made the decision to respond the way you do. You know, I mean, you haven't chosen to try to bring someone else in, let's say, to hire somebody. You see, I think that's an increasingly bigger issue in our society, though. I'm thinking, for example, let's say that your spouse has Alzheimer's. Is it more, that really hits your independence? Because the person is incredibly dependent on you then, if that's the case. Or let's say I have a terminal illness, which doesn't have to be Alzheimer's, terminal illness which is, you know, very confined. But you choose, as you say, you've chosen to respond to it by helping to take care of that person, let's say. One of the things I know that happens in that situation is that your relationship changes. It's no longer a relationship of equality or not as equal. And once the relationship moves from that kind of equality feeling to a real sense of dependence, what often happens, right, if you're not used to it and they're not used to it, is that person rebels. They don't want to be that dependent. I mean, it isn't like they've been sitting around for years waiting to be dependent on you, right? In the same position you're in, unless they do have Alzheimer's and it's not clicking, but if their mental faculties are there, they don't want to be dependent either, right? I mean, your husband, I don't know you, but my guess, educated guess would be, he doesn't like being dependent on you either. It's nothing against you. You don't want to be dependent, period, probably. But he has to be.
There's a lot of anger, too, because my husband's real sick, and, you know, give everything and then it seems like sickness makes them so hateful that sometimes you just would like to
That's
walk
right.
out the door
That's right.
and leave them.
That's right. That's right. Sickness does not always bring out the best in people, and particularly if it's this matter of deep, of independence. You know, you really resent being dependent. I would. I'm not, you know, I'm not any more perfect than the 17th century nun in that respect. Do we make too much of independence? Are we too wedded to independence? I'm not just asking you, I ask myself that. Is that too high a, you know, what about mutual caring? I mean, what about love for each other? What about, you know, all this kind of, is independence seems in our culture to be such a high value. You kind of wonder, would it help to bring it down a few notches? Yeah.
And this result of the nuclear family. Uh-huh. In the past, the families all grew up as a unit, and I think it was more natural for mom and dad to stay with the family.
Have an extended family.
Now we've all gone our separate ways, and now it's not going back to.
Right. Well, like Laura, you know, your mother stayed, not your mother, your grandmother, lived with you for many, many years. Yeah, that was very normal then, right? Sure, it's an example of that, but the question I think is still there. Is independence too high? Have we worshipped independence at the cost of some other thing?
How near is that just a sense of pride?
now you're meddling.
Really?
Yes, that is. It's independence and pride are kissing cousins, aren't they? Okay, pride, yeah. Well, self-respect, though.
Yeah,
self-respect.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of pride in it. Mm-hmm. I've never thought of that before.
Yeah, there. Well, sure there is, yeah.
It's humiliating not to be able to do the things that you have done mm-hmm. before, particularly if you can't do things that you identified yourself with very much.
That are so much a part of you that it doesn't seem like you anymore. Yeah, that's right. Well, like my dad with a car. I mean, driving a car was a part of him. That's part of who dad was. He loved to drive. That he wasn't himself anymore. And yeah, it's funny how all this gets wrapped up in your image. You can't. But it's inevitable, isn't it? I mean, when you age, you're not going to be able to do all the things you did before. Your personality is going to change. Our personalities are going to change. Why is that so terrible? Yeah.
Well, I just think this is like what you brought out the other day.
On mortality. Yeah.
On the fact that we have this myth that it's normal to be healthy.
Yeah, right.
And so we have this myth that it's the norm, the ideal, is to be independent. And actually, being just a part of a nuclear family, you know, mm-hmm. back in the days when people just assumed that grandma would live with them forever, you know, whatever, that could be the norm, but it isn't anymore. And so we think that that's wrong.
Well, let me suggest something else is going on here, I think, psychologically. I think another thing that's going on here is we think of when the independence thing changes, it's a loss.
Right.
You see, we make the connection, don't we? It's a loss. Therefore, losses are bad.
Right.
Another way to look at that is it's an opportunity to try something new. it's an opportunity to make a change and see if we can create a new situation or see if we can cope with that. It's okay, let's say for example you can't drive a car anymore, you're dependent on buses. Does that mean you can't do anything?
No.
Depends on where you live.
Yeah, of course. Or maybe you should live somewhere else, you know, if you're gonna be dependent on buses now, you need to live someplace where there's better transportation perhaps. But let's say, all right, does that open up some possibilities? Rather than it's always a loss. You see, if you live your life thinking everything that happens is a loss, and you get older and each year you lose more, boy, you know, when do you stop losing?
I've struggled a good deal with another kind of dependence, and that is depending upon your children for much of your social activities. Now, I know people that are called every day, especially if you're a widow or a widower, then you are more dependent, it seems like, on your children, and they call them every day. They have to go out at least once a week. And I know in another case where the mother insists on this. I have learned in my own case, the hard way perhaps, that I can't depend on my children. I have to have other relationships.
So you've regrouped. You've regrouped.
Well, yeah.
You know, you said, okay, here's, you know, it's how do we adjust to this now, and how can we make a different kind of life? How can we deal with it creatively is what you're really saying.
Well, I lived in a townhouse, you know, where there's no central meeting place, and of course, so I have to reach out. I now plan to move into a cooperative with the community, with a program, you know, exercise room, library, name it, you know.
Your personality is going to take on some new flavors there.
Well, they always say how important it is to have relationships. You
right.
know? Even married people live longer, you know.
Or to use a little different kind of terminology and analogies, you can teach an old dog new tricks.
Okay, I'll accept that.
Mark?
I was going to say that in connection with this, that giving up full freedom or independence is a loss.
Sure.
We don't regard it that way when we choose to get married.
Good point.
We are totally independent.
Yeah.
So not at all. We willingly give up part of that to share our life with somebody else. And that's not a lot.
That's a very interesting analogy. So if you look at that as a step forward rather than a step backward, or you look at it as an addition in a sense rather than as a loss, could we look at what happens in our later years when we make some changes, which can be read solely as a loss? Is there any way to look at some of those things as additions, as new possibilities?
Well, I think the mention over here of volunteer service is a very important element.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an addition. That's a thing. Okay. Laura, you want to say? That would help me at least, I think, because I think we are programmed, is a bad word perhaps, but I think we are programmed in our culture to think if something changes, it's a loss, particularly if it's this dependence thing, interdependence thing. But when you look at, why is dependence a loss? That is, why is the admission that I need you a loss? Why is the, in marriage, right, it's an admission I need you. Why else would you get, there's a lot of reasons to get married, but that's one of them. You know, that's not a loss, it's a gain.
I think we're too reluctant to tell our children what we need from them.
You got
well
that right.
With friends and so on.
You got that right.
I can't do it. So
I think we are reluctant, yes.
You know, one of the ills that's pointed out with the nuclear family concept is that the young don't have the opportunity to learn from the old.
Right.
And if you would look at this going into a child's home, that you are being a service to the grandchildren to share with them. I mean, regard them simply as a pain in the neck and whatnot.
Well, maybe a little of both.
But if the situation is such where you can live with them and work with them, they have much to learn from you, as well as vice versa.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's an illustration of the recognition that you can create a new situation. You can look at it as an opportunity, rather than always as a loss or as a downer, as the kids say, or as you know, something like that. Yeah, in fact, my impression is that there are younger people, not necessarily the age of our kids, but the grandchildren age, often who are very appreciative of the opportunity to get to know us better. Yeah.
Speaking of the nursing home in the town I live in, where they encouraged teachers to bring their kids to visit.
Yeah.
And they were looking at it from what it did for the residents.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
But we had a parochial school, and I heard it from the other end.
From the kids,
yeah. The kids talk about how wonderful it was to be with these old people.
Yeah.
And to talk with them.
Yeah.
Those kids benefited greatly.
It's nice to know you're appreciated.
The Josephine home in Stanwood, uh-huh. a nursing home,
yeah.
also has kindergarten mm-hmm. connection with it. And I think this is a growing trend. It's happening in other ones, too. And all the time there is an interplay between the mm-hmm. older people in the nursing home and these children. Mm-hmm. They do crafts together. They exchange time and have lunches mm-hmm. together and whatnot. Again, the children benefit quite as much as the elders.
Maybe God had something in mind when God created grandchildren. maybe God wasn't so dumb that he couldn't figure out that when you get older, that you can also be of use. Or I'm not convinced, for example, that we don't have as much ability, in some ways more ability than younger people, to adjust. And to readjust to things. And I think in some ways, we have more ability to readjust and to make adjustments because a lot of adjustments we've made already in maybe not exactly the same ones, but we've been through a lot of stuff. I know I find, for example, I get into some new situation, I dread it a little bit, but I think, well, I've been through stuff like that before, about 4 million times. But if it's just the first thing, you know, when you're young. And so the idea that somehow older people can't adjust. I have found in my experience many times, it's the older people, I don't know, 70s, 80s, particularly, who have more ability to adjust to new ideas, to new ways of doing things. I don't think we should put ourselves down as, you know, living lives where we lose everything and it's getting worse and worse. Where we're losing our independence, where our thing is just going downhill. I like going downhill. I might go uphill.
I'm here to hear what you got on point five.
That's, I'm moving there.
You're in the point. That's it. Let's go.
One of the ways to look at this is, and I've heard this say, well, look, in terms of money, in terms of planning, in terms of control, leave everything in God's hands. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
Giving us brains.
Giving us brains. Okay. Maybe leaving everything in God's hands means to use what God's given us. Okay. Do you believe that whatever you do, God will provide? You know, God will take care of you. It doesn't make any difference. You don't have to worry about money. You don't have to worry about planning ahead. God will take care of you. You believe that?
You need to be reminded.
I learned that when I was a kid. I come from a family of ten girls, and my father was an alcoholic.
That's a family.
And she used to teach us, don't worry, God will take care of us. And somehow we always had some kind of food on the table. It might not have been like nowadays, but we thought it was good.
And you're still here.
Yes.
Right.
Survived it. Nobody
ever
told me you were
good. They call us the town records kids.
Is that also true? And probably the central teaching, I think, in terms of faith on this one is the understanding of stewardship. But stewardship is not only, of course, a matter of spending money, is it? Stewardship is a matter of spending your life. Stewardship is a matter of spending your time, right? Spending your talents. And that doesn't stop. My personal feeling is that that's the major, for me, the major faith dimension of this. Is that we are called to be stewards of what we have, and we're called to be good users of the gifts we've been given. And that doesn't stop with age. In fact, you have opportunities, it seems to me, to use your gifts in ways that you may never have thought of before. Laurie's working in an Asian museum. She's never worked in an Asian museum before. She's getting acquainted with people of cultures, you know, that are really kind of different than folks we've been with before. I'm working on I'm chairing a committee where we are considering the possibility of putting a new seminary together in the Seattle area. I've been in seminary education all my life. I've never had the experience of putting a new seminary together. But who better? You know, I mean, stuff that I think about, well, why would I have the temerity to do this? You know, but why not? I mean, why not try something new? You don't have to give up.